Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice. It is a Wednesday, April the 29th, 2020, only 2 days left in the month of April, 16 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to a great day here on WWGH Radio. Now, coming up after this show, we will have the Charlie Evers Show. I will be sitting in for Charlie this morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Glenn Coble will be with me, and then Glenn Coble will be on this afternoon, 12:10 to 1 p.m. with A Progressive Life. And on this show this morning, we have a great lineup. Next hour, we're going to be joined by legendary television judge, one of the highest rated television judges of all time, Judge Joe Brown, to get caught up on his thoughts on COVID-19 and everything going on with the coronavirus pandemic. Now, our guest in hour number one this morning is a first-time visitor to this program, but I hope not a last-time visitor. And it's an interesting story, because Thomas Beatty became the first person in 2008 to give birth. Now, that doesn't sound big in and of itself, but he is a male, listed on his insurance policies as a male. So a male giving birth is something you don't see every day. Thomas Beatty is the first male to give birth in this country. And what a story he has to tell, which we are going to learn this morning. And it's an interesting story because it brings controversy from both sides. Not necessarily Thomas's story, but it brings out very strong feelings from people just in advertising that Thomas was going to be on. But we're so glad to finally hear his story in his own words, which is what we all want to do. Let's go to the phones and talk to the first man to ever give birth to a child, Thomas Beatty. Thomas, how are you?
Hey there, Scott. Thanks for having me. I want to say thanks for pronouncing my last name right.
You know, Thomas, I'm so glad we got that right. But it's interesting, when we advertised that you were going to be on today and did some promos for it, you know, your story brings out strong emotion on both sides. Some people think it's great. Some people think it is not so great. Why do you think this brought out such strong emotion in people?
You know, it is. I understand how it's a controversial topic. I've been dealing with it ever since my story went public. You know, honestly, I'm surprised that I have support today. When the story first came out, it was pretty brutal. It was pretty hard, especially going online and reading all the comments and everything. But essentially, when you look at it, why would you be bent out of shape for someone starting a family? It seems a little counterintuitive. But yeah, I can see how it pushes buttons on both sides. I wish it didn't. I wish it were widely understood and accepted, but there's a lot of misunderstanding about the topic.
And I hope that's what we can do in a long-form interview here, having you for 45 minutes this morning, is kind of tell this story, and hopefully that's what we're able to do. Now, Thomas, you were born Tracy. Tell us about your early childhood. What was that like when you were living life as a young girl named Tracy?
Well, I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii. My mom was born in Minnesota, and my father was born in Hawaii. I'm biracial. I'm half white and half Asian. So that alone, it was a little different growing up. Not everyone around me had that kind of makeup. But I would consider that I had a normal childhood upbringing. My father was stern. He was a disciplinarian. My mom was loving and kind, and she was a teacher for the mentally disabled. It was a loving home, but yeah, I think I had some pretty good role models.
As you were growing up as Tracy, when did you start to realize that being a girl at that particular time, I think is what we would say, was not right for you?
Well, I just grew up not even really thinking about it. I was just organically myself and have always been that way. But, you know, I liked things that other girls didn't necessarily like. I didn't have an older sister. I did have an older brother, but he didn't. He was 13 years older than me, so I didn't really have any siblings to play with. I eventually ended up having a younger brother, 5 years younger than me, but, you know, it didn't dawn on me until later in life when it was brought to my attention that why do I like playing with Legos, and why do I like Star Wars, and why do I run around with my shirt off, I was in bliss until it was brought to my attention that I was different.
At what point did you decide that this is who I am, that I am not a female?
Well, going to college, I realized after seeing examples of other people who have been able to live their lives as the gender of their choice and how they feel most comfortable with, I realized that I didn't have to have that restriction placed on myself. If I wanted to have my outside of my body match how I felt on the inside, this was an option for me.
Now, this is one of the big points, Thomas, that a lot of people make. What makes you internally a man and not a woman?
That's a pretty profound, deep question. I don't think anyone has been able to solidly explain that. I just go with how I feel, my energy. I've always had a masculine energy. It's not something that's contrived or, you know, created. It's just the way I am. So I just found it easier to live my life following that and choosing the things that I, you know, like from the clothes I choose to wear to the things I want to do. I feel most comfortable having a male role in society, and it's a lot easier for me. I feel happy. I feel fortunate. I understand that people have a problem with it, and when that comes to light, it does make life a little bit harder to live. Like when my story came public, it threw in a little bit of complication. You know, it's like when you're living your life and everyone sees you as male, and then suddenly they think, oh, because you gave birth, you're no longer male, then you know, you're kind of living in a fishbowl. So it did kind of complicate things, but I don't regret any decision I've ever made.
In your opinion, when we talk about roles, and I think they're ever-changing now in society, what would you define a male's role in society as?
Well, other than physical appearance, I mean, that's a hard one. It's like, you know, when you have a family, you have a mother and a father, what are the roles for each person? A lot of people would say that they're equal. And I think when it comes to that, as far as, you know, jobs or just your way of living and your philosophy, there is no difference. But physically, there is a difference between men and women, and people will judge you immediately upon looking at you, what's a man and what's a woman. I just happen to fall into that category. When people look at me now, I'm male, and I suppose there are ingrained expectations for what men and women are supposed to do. I guess men are supposed to be seen as more providers, but in this day and age, that's also not true. You know, women are providers. There are women, you know, single mothers who are providers. So, I mean, there's a lot of nuances here.
Without doubt. And Thomas, I think a big question also is that aside from any surgeries, and we'll get into that in a second, but being born with female parts, a lot of people would say, what is the difference, aside from the surgery, between being what we would call a lesbian and why go all the way? Why have the surgery, I guess, is the point.
So what's the difference between a lesbian and...
Yeah, why not live life just that way as opposed to actually having the surgery? What drives somebody to have that gender reassignment surgery?
Well, sexual orientation has nothing to do with it. I mean, there are people who transition who maintain their sexual orientation, and sometimes it switches, but being a lesbian really has nothing to do with it, who you're attracted to. It's how you feel on the inside as your energy and how you want to present in society and the role you want to take and how you want other people to treat you. So I just didn't feel like I wanted to live my life as a woman. That's not how I wanted to be addressed. That wasn't my identity with myself in society.
Mm. 2002, you made the decision to have the sex reassignment surgery. Now, at this point, I believe, and again, we're on radio here, so we'll try to use as broad a terms as we can. It was the surgery above the waist. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I had. I had surgery above the waist.
Yeah. So, basically, that it seems like a very evasive surgery. Why did you decide to make that choice, and what was it like?
Well, it was painful.
Yeah.
I didn't take the decision lightly, but it's something that I didn't even have to think about. And I was so certain about it, I was so happy about it, and when I finally went through with it, it was literally like a weight was lifted from my chest.
Now, when that's done, what did it do for you mentally? At that point, in your mind, did you become more of a male? How did that work?
It took away the complication for me in society. You know, walking around with not having everything look congruent to other people. You know, I looked male, short hair, the way I dressed. But having breasts kind of took away from that. People were distracted by that. People were confused by that. So it made things awkward for me. But once having that surgery, there wasn't that inconsistency anymore. There wasn't a question. There wasn't that complication of other people perceiving me as different. So it just made it easier for me to live in society.
Now, when you married your first wife, what were the... how was that marriage laid out? How was that marriage defined? Is it a man and a woman and a woman? How is that looked upon by society and by law?
Well, by society and law, in Hawaii, same marriage was not legal when we got married. I went through all of the steps to legally change all of my documentation, legal documentation, listing me as male. So that went from my birth certificate to my Social Security marker, to my passport, to my government ID, my driver's license. Everything was switched to male, and I was able to get married as husband and wife. So it was completely validly legal.
So doing all those things to become validly legal, in the eyes of everybody, at that particular point, you are seen as a male in society. You would be counted as a male.
That's correct.
Now, what is the defining line? Because I think this is a big question for people. How does that happen? How would somebody not be able to get that done, and how would somebody be able to get that done who might feel the same way you do?
It really depends on their jurisdiction where they live, what state they live in, and what kind of requirements that's laid out for a valid legal sex change. You know, we're a country of 50 states with different opinions. Hawaii, I mean, it wasn't easy. It wasn't difficult to do the change, just like Arizona. Both of them, I currently live in Arizona right now, and Arizona is seen as much of a conservative state, but both of them have the same requirements. I underwent surgery, and I got a physician's letter verifying that I did go through physical changes, and as well as psychological confirmation of my gender identity, it's a long process, but I understand that it may be more difficult for other people in maybe different cities and states to have the transition.
How did it come about, Thomas? Because this is the big thing. How did it come about that you would become pregnant? Now, because at this point, you consider yourself a male. It seems like the government considers you a male at this point of the state you live in. How does that happen?
How does deciding to get pregnant happen or getting pregnant happen?
Both.
Okay. Well, when I went through surgery, I wasn't giving up my ability to procreate. I didn't see that as, like, being sterile is not a requirement to switch or change sex or gender. I wanted to maintain that. And so in doing so, and, you know, a lot of people feel like when you want to transition, you need to become sterile. That's strange. You know, why would a person want to give up that right to have children? So it's not a legal requirement to sterilize yourself. I mean, that's pretty barbaric. So that option was still there for me always. I've always wanted to be a parent. I didn't ever anticipate being a pregnant man, but after the transition, you know, I got married, I moved to a different state, bought a home, and the house just felt empty. And I wanted to have a family. And basically, that was the only way that my wife and I could start a family, since she had a hysterectomy. She had endometriosis years prior, so she wasn't able to get pregnant. Yet I had the ability to get pregnant, even though I was legally male. That didn't stop my desire, and it didn't stop my ability to get pregnant.
So at that particular point, you still had everything in your body that would allow you to carry a child to term and to deliver?
Yes, that's correct.
So how did you become pregnant? What was the process?
We went through artificial insemination. So it took a while, but we finally found fertility doctors to help. I mean, we went through so many doctors, so many people who are unwilling to help. But we finally did find someone to help, and we used cryogenically frozen sperm from a sperm bank, and we did a home insemination. We tried it in office. That didn't work, but we did it at home with a syringe, and it worked. Mm. Amazingly.
Now, living life as a male, wanting to be a male, already having had the sex reassignment surgery 6 years prior, does it feel strange to be a male who is pregnant at this point?
Well, I wouldn't be able to compare it to anything else, since I was male for female and gave birth, but it was a whirlwind of emotions. I mean, anyone getting pregnant, you don't know. It's the unexpected. You know, how bad is this going to hurt? Is everything going to go okay? And you start to worry about every little thing. But there was a palpable sense of excitement and finally being able to realize a dream of being a father. So it's just like a mix of emotions, and then having to deal with the physicality of discomfort. But overall, seeing myself in the mirror, it was a little trippy. You know, I was a bodybuilder formerly. And so the way my body looked was very important to me. I was very aware of every little change. My muscle just started to melt off my body. My proportions changed a little bit. It was I knew I'd be able to get my body back at some point, but it was just one of those necessary phases that I had to go through to actually deliver a child, you know, be the father that I wanted to be. And yeah, so it was interesting.
Now, the 9 months from the time that you are pregnant until the time you deliver, this is kind of where it all hits the fan nationally. How did it come about that you would go national with this, and what was that period like?
Well, there was never an idea to go nationally about this, or even let anyone in my neighborhood know. I was naive, thinking that I could just incubate my house and suddenly a child would appear. But basically, I had gotten pregnant the first time around, and I didn't know that I was pregnant. I thought that the attempt failed, because when I did a pregnancy test, it was negative. But weeks later, I was in extreme abdominal pain, and I went to the emergency in my small town, and it was discovered that I was pregnant, and the doctor was shocked. It was kind of a calamity, and, you know, nurses were talking, and slowly the word started getting back to me in my community that I was pregnant in the hospital, which obviously is a violation of HIPAA, but I was like, okay, well, we got an issue here. And when I got pregnant again, I decided to reach out to the LGBT community to see what others had done in my position before, how they navigated, you know, medicine and the whole legal change, you know, like what is it going to say on my child's birth certificate? How am I going to maintain my identity as father and husband? And socially, what's going to happen? And it's just so many different questions. So I reached out to different LGBT organizations. I called around. I didn't get great reception. Actually, it was a lot of closed doors in my face. I did get some opinions to do this and do that. But ultimately, when I spoke with a magazine, an LGBT magazine, about the issue, they said, well, why don't you just write a first-person article about your experience and then take it from there. So I did. My wife took a picture of me. I'm standing in front of the shower without my shirt on and a belly, and submitted that along with the questions that I had. And then from there, it just exploded very quickly online, and then the rest is history.
And obviously at that time, I remember it very well, you were billed as the first male to be pregnant. This is something that had been talked about for many, many years in society, but never had been done. Did you like that idea? Is that the definition in your mind of what happened? That you were the first male who was pregnant?
Well, technically, from a legal standpoint, yes. I'm the first person in the world to be recognized legally as a pregnant man. And that part is important as far as rights go for transgender people and identity and making sure that it's upheld. I think that it's an important step. It had to happen. But socially, it's a different thing. I mean, people, who knows, for as long as people have been around, I'm sure that there have been masculine-identifying people who have given birth but haven't had the ability to be recognized legally. So, you know, it's a complicated issue, but we're here. We're here now.
Yeah, but
in the 21st century.
Well, and this becomes a thing, and I think what you just said is probably the most important part, because that's what people seem to argue most over. Because when you say this is the first male who ever had carried a baby and delivered a baby, the question is, how can that happen? That can't happen naturally. So what makes you the first male again? Why are we able to say that you are the first male who carried and delivered a child?
It's all just coming down to, well, first of all, I was billed that way by the media, obviously by the way I looked. But they did some further researching and realized that legally this is the first case. And I did go through court proceedings in trying to divorce my first wife that ran into that same issue of, what do we have before us? Is this a valid heterosexual marriage? Can it be that way if I had given birth during the marriage? And it ultimately boils down to yes, and this is what happened, and I was able to maintain my male identity, and therefore it's important for the transgender community that was not invalidated.
Mm. Tell me what delivery was like.
Can you tell me what your most painful experience in your life was?
That bad, huh?
Think of anything, and then times that by 10. And it was pretty bad. With my first child, Susan, I was in labor for basically 48 hours. And I tried to get an epidural, but that wore off because I said, you need to feel it. And I did, and it was, wow. I really, God, I don't know. I just crawled inside myself and just rode through it. But my second pregnancy with my son, Austin, I did have an epidural, and that was amazing. Like, literally, I fell asleep, and then suddenly I woke up and giving birth. And I was like, I must have been high on the epidural medicine, but I was like, I want to have 10 of these. Yeah, no, it makes a huge difference, but it is quite a trip. It really radiates from inside out. I can't even describe to you how painful it was.
When the moment came when they handed your first child to you, what is that moment like?
It was surreal. When Susan came out, because I'd been in so many hours of distress and she was in distress, she was whisked away from me, so I couldn't even see her. All I could see was a limp baby, and I was mortified. I was in so much panic, and I didn't know what was happening. Finally, when they brought her back to me, when I heard her cry, it was just unbelievable. Like, I felt like in that moment, I was living my purpose. And when she was placed on my chest, I still look back to today as in slow motion. It was just amazing. And that feeling continues throughout my life when I look at my four children today.
When you look back at this and how it was all handled at the time, when it was a huge media circus, do you regret any part of that? Or do you regret anything that you did personally during that time?
You know, I never thought I would be the billboard for pregnant men. I am an activist at heart, that's for sure. I was trying to fight for same-sex marriage before all of this. And I've never had a problem stating my own opinions, but this, I don't regret what happened. I happen to be the person that took the face of this, but I think it was a necessary step. And, you know, it may not be embraced fully today, but it's the conversation that needed to start. And I'm glad that we're talking about it. I'm glad you're having me on the show today. I'm not out to change any minds. It would be great if people could open their minds. But I know there are a lot of people out there that feel similar to me. Whether it doesn't matter, if it has to do with race or sex or gender or anything, just fighting for what you believe in and fighting for what you want. And, defining normal for yourself.
You know, Thomas, this is the question that anybody, I think, in the LGBTQ community always faces when there's any kind of gender change in any type of way. Because the answer people always give, it usually is not in a question, the answer or statement is, whatever what you're born as is what you are. You can change whatever you want, but you're born as what you are. How do you answer that?
Yeah, I am who I am. I'm the same way that I was as I was born. I haven't changed at all. I've always been the same. This is the way I've always been. This is how I've always felt internally. If anything, it's society that puts pressure on you about the way you should be. Men should do this. Women should do this. I've always just organically been myself, and that's just the way it is.
I think the title that would be used would be trans man. What is life like as a trans man?
Well, I don't necessarily identify that. I don't introduce myself as, hi, I'm Thomas Beatty, I'm a trans man. It doesn't say that on my license. It's just, it's M for male. But it's it's different, just because I never know who's supportive. You know, oftentimes people don't know, even despite my public appearance, like at work. I don't even know if people at work know. So there's always a little bit of uncertainty about how people are going to feel or if their opinions are going to change if they find out. Sadly, there is a lot of negative opinion and ingrained prejudice, so it is difficult. I mean, sometimes I have to be aware of where I am and have to worry about safety. So I wouldn't say that it's an easy life, but is it ever easy for anyone?
It's a good question, and you talked about the discrimination that you have faced, talked about it a little bit there. What is that like? What do people, what's their response when it's not in a positive way?
Oh, gosh. Look at the internet. Just do a search, read the comments. It's gotten pretty bad, you know. I've had death threats, my family. There's a lot of physical threats, a lot of derogatory comments. It's pretty brutal. You know, I wouldn't want to be face-to-face with some of these people in a bathroom by myself or in a dark alley. You know, there's definitely a threat. And for people to wish ill upon someone just because they're trying to live their life happily with a family, wishing ill upon unborn babies and wishing the death of my children, I mean, that's pretty horrific. That's inhumane.
You know, Thomas, it's interesting because it's hard to know why somebody thinks the way they do, but why do you think they feel that way? What do you think is driving that?
You know, I've been thinking about that for years, and I would love to know. I think it's different for everyone. You don't know what's in other people's heads, but I can only speculate why people get so bent out of shape. It challenges their belief, their view of the world, you know, how things are. Maybe religion has something to do with it, in every way, shape, and form, you know, not just one religion in particular. But some people are threatened, you know, that what they see is not conforming to what they've known or learned. Honestly, I don't know why some people feel so threatened. It's not just from the general community. I mean, even within the LGBT community, it's pretty bad. You know, a lot of people discriminate against transgender people, even gays and lesbians. So, even within the transgender community, I had a lot of hate thrown my way. Like, how could you do this? You know, why would you do this? You're not really a trans man. There's just a lot of misunderstanding in every direction. And I don't know, honestly. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting because it makes me think about spirituality. And it makes me think about the big spiritual questions we all have in life, and you're in a very unique position to have an opinion on these, being the first identified first man to ever have a baby. It'd be interesting to know, are you pro-life or pro-choice?
Well, I'm pro-life and pro-choice. I'm pro-choosing the way you want to live your life in this life. I'm pro-life as well. I support the living.
So, do you think, let me take another pass at this, do you think that people should be permitted under law to have abortions?
Well, that's a tricky little question there. Wow, I just sneaked that in. No, for myself personally, I would never do that. I could never do that. I can't even think about doing that. For other people, you know, that's a valid question. Whether or not I support that legally, I don't think my opinion matters. But I can only speak from my own experience, and I wouldn't do that.
You know, and certainly everybody can have their opinion, and if you don't want to give yours, I certainly understand, but why do you think your opinion wouldn't matter on that subject? So many people feel their opinions do on that one. We hear it every presidential year.
Yeah, well, I'm not a person who, if I stated my opinion, it would change things. You know, it's kind of like one of those things you don't really want to talk about in public.
No,
religion, politics, all this. Even though I'm talking about an extremely controversial subject, but yeah, I mean, it's a really heavy topic, and honestly, I feel like I need to know more about both sides before, you know, I can firmly state something.
So at this point, basically, just on that subject, what you're saying is it's not something you would do, you would not encourage anybody else to do it, but as far as what the law says, you don't have a formed opinion on it at this point.
I wouldn't make any changes at this point. I was happy with the way things are and were, but for myself personally, right, I wouldn't choose it.
We are in a presidential year. Do you have any political leanings?
Yeah, I do.
And we'll take another pass at this one. Would you like to tell us where those political leanings lie?
Well, my political leanings are making the world a better place, and we are certainly not in that boat now. I'm pretty mortified about the state of affairs today, and we can blame it on one person, but how can you? We already knew the way our current president was before he got into the office. It's more about how it's still continuing and how it can possibly continue in the future on the same course. I mean, everyone is aware that the state of affairs in the world is not good. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm living in the twilight zone sometimes.
You know, Thomas, one more question on spirituality here, because I think it's an interesting topic. Do you have a spiritual belief?
I believe in energy. I don't subscribe to any orthodox religion. I don't know how we got here or why. I don't think I'll ever know. But all I can do is just make the best decisions and choices I can in this life and hope those were good enough.
Do you think there is something when we leave here?
You mean when each person
leaves
here?
When we die, do you believe we go somewhere?
Well, I believe energy is constant. I mean, it's just transforming forms of energy to other forms. So I don't know what that looks like in the scheme of things.
Would you believe in a literal heaven and a literal hell?
Not literally.
Do you think you might be reunited with people who have gone before you?
I don't know what that means. If you're talking about, my mom died and then I passed through bright light, and then I pop out on the other side, and there she is with her blonde hair, and I can hug her. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, back to what I said about energy, I think, like, you know, we all fuse together at some point.
Would you identify yourself as an atheist, a non-believer?
Well, when it comes to saying that there is no God, I wouldn't say that. I can't definitively say that because I don't know. So, technically, I wouldn't be an atheist.
It's an interesting conversation, because when we look back at what you did, it's always going to be remembered. There's only one first. Only one first male, legally, to have a baby. Would you do it again? If you could. If you could.
Yeah.
Oh, really? No doubts at all there.
No, I just... Oh, my God, I love children. I've got four now, but I'm old. I don't think it can happen anymore. I've had lower surgery, which obviously wouldn't stop me either. I still retain the parts to make babies, but I've also had lower surgery, so it's a bit of a tricky thing. But yeah, 46, it's I can't use my own reproductive genes. But if I could, I would.
When you had, what prompted you to have the lower surgery, knowing that obviously this would take away that, and again, much like the top part, I think that would be a pretty evasive surgery.
Yeah, it's extremely invasive. If that basically is the definition right there. I did that in 2012, and it was even worse than giving birth, I think. I think I can say that. It was more searing and lasting. It just wasn't, you know, through a process of labor. But, I didn't take away my ability to give birth. Obviously, I would have to have a cesarean. But I just felt like it was something that I wanted to do physically, I guess for selfish reasons, for sex.
Yeah, well, and you know, and that's a big question in this whole thing because, you know, not to get too personal here because, again, it's just a morning show on radio, but, you know, the way that people get together, normally a man and a woman would get together is not typically because of the parts, how you would get together with your wife. So I think that's where the labels come in for a lot of people. Is it a lesbian? Is it gay? How do we define it? Because of that part of it.
Sure.
Yeah. So how do you define it? Do you define it that, I mean, does the woman you're with, would she be considered a lesbian because of that? Just purely based in the act of how things go?
Well, first of all, you'd have to know what the act looks like, and you don't. But no, she does not identify as a lesbian at all. She is not attracted to women, and she never has been. We have relations just like any next heterosexual couple would. So I don't think the sex acts, even though I don't think they're different, I don't think they define sexual orientation at all.
You know, Thomas, 100 years from now, as I say, there's only going to be one first. There's only going to be one first legal male who had a baby. How do you hope they look back on you?
Well, I do hope that people are kinder in the future. I guess these images are going to last for as long as humans can record images. Hopefully it just continues that conversation of, what are roles in society? What are expected of people? What should people do? What could people do? You know, what limits do we have? It's kind of mind-opening.
Are you glad with the moniker of first male to have a baby?
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
What should we call it?
No, I don't, I don't care. I don't mind. It's cool that it did happen. But hopefully at some point it doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be talked about that way. It's just that it happened. As long as it makes things easier and better in the future, that's all that I really care about.
You know, Thomas, before I let you go here, because I found this a very interesting conversation, and I think our listeners have too, and as I started by saying, there is a lot of controversy involved with this, and you've talked about the discrimination and the things that you've faced, and you've also talked about your spiritual beliefs and not really knowing what happens when we leave this earth, when our final day comes. Do you ever worry because of what you've done and what people say obviously discriminatory in a way towards you, that you might end up in a place called hell one day?
Well, no, I don't worry about those things. I don't think that I'm a bad person. I think that the choices I've made in life are for good. So if there is a hell and if I'm punished for this, then so be it. But I think that's highly unlikely.
It's a very honest answer. And if there is a heaven, do you think you will end up there?
I don't think so. I don't think, you know, just as much as I don't subscribe to the idea of hell, I just hope for peace, you know. I don't think my brain's going to be working when I'm gone. So, I don't think either way is going to happen, but I hope that it's just peace.
Thomas, I hope you've enjoyed this, because I really have found this to be a fascinating, interesting conversation, and whether or not people agree with what you've done, I hope for 45 minutes they've been able to sit down and learn exactly what happened and what you've faced and what your beliefs are, and I think that's an important thing.
Thank you for that, and I have to say I didn't know what to expect coming into this. I have not listened to your show, I do have to admit, but I did enjoy our conversation. I think that you've actually asked some pretty poignant questions, and I do appreciate that, even more so than some of the well-known people who have interviewed me. So I think that's great. Thank you for that.
Thomas Beatty, the first male to have a baby. How about that? Thomas, you're welcome back anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye. How about that? No matter how you feel, at least you heard it. We'll be back in 10 minutes. Stay tuned.
Babe, Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit us.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.